This is TurnbuckleTrash.net.
After all, they're just wrestling, right?
Woo! We'll break your bones! We'll grind you into pudding! We'll turn your faces off!
It's time to take out the trash on Turnbuckle Trash. Pro wrestling from a fan's perspective.
Without further ado, allow me to present the newest sensation of the entertainment world,
Zane Peterson.
Well, he's doing really, really well blocking those punches with his face.
Dave Denton.
A mindless eating machine.
Ready, master control?
Ready, switch on.
This is Turnbuckle Trash.
I'm taking the trash out.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Man, we have got a great Turnbuckle Trash all lined up for you. Zane is with us. Hi, Zane.
Dr. Dave, is it still Doctor?
It is still Dr. Dave. I am the one and only, the original Doctor of Rock for all of Northern Utah. And who else is joining us now?
You can call me Dr. Crapo.
Andrew Crapo.
Crapo.
Oh, shots fired already.
Hey, okay. I forgot to ask you when I met you that first time. Are you related to the Crapos that are in politics in Idaho?
You know, we are related. I can't say I know them personally, but I get that question a lot.
Okay.
And my father says all the Crapos came across on a boat back in the day, and so we're all family here.
Just a floating pile of Crapo, right?
That's right.
You're full of Crapo today, aren't you?
we're all kind of full of Crapo today.
Shots fired.
Hey, Andrew, thanks for joining us today. We've been meaning to get you on for quite a few months now. Actually, back in the summer, that's when I met you, when we all met in West Valley City, Utah, to go to the wrestling event with the WWE at the Maverick Center there. And was that your very first attempt at a live wrestling match, Andrew?
Yeah, indeed it was. That was my first experience in the WWE ring.
So, Andrew, you and I have been friends for a long time, and I didn't – I think – so are you a long-time professional wrestling fan, or are you kind of a noob, or are you a more of a casual fan throughout the years? How would you – if you were to label yourself, how would you describe your wrestling knowledge and experience?
Yeah, great question there, Zane. When I remember as a kid, you know, I was probably 6 or 8 or so. I was quite involved in watching the wrestling. You know, I'm sure it was a different scene back then, and I don't really recall much other than being a big fan of Hulk Hogan. I had the old Hulk Hogan shirt I'd wear, and I'd run around and jump on my dad and pretend I was Hulk. But then growing up and stuff, I didn't really follow too much. I'd say it's more of maybe the last 6 months, just kind of joking around with Zane on the social media and stuff. That's really got my attention into the wrestling again.
So you are a little bit of a newbie with it. I know that that night in West Valley City, you were asking me a lot of questions about some of the storylines and stuff. But I want to get your first impression of going to a live event. And we had great seats. We were, what, on the floor, sixth or seventh row?
Yeah.
What was your thought processes as you watched these performers, these wrestlers, come out of the locker room and just tear the house down?
Well, you know, the first thing I realized was just how much the crowd plays into it. You know, the crowd really gets involved. They love their heroes or their villains, and just the interaction you see from wrestler to fan. You don't see that nearly so much in other sports or areas. And so I really enjoyed seeing how everyone got involved, and there was a lot of play going back and forth. That was the first thing that stood out to me. But after that, you know, one thing that I really learned is that it's an art, man. There's so much to it, because there were gigantic guys diving, you know, in between the ropes, landing on top of people. If I had to do that, I'd probably have to commit to hurting myself hundreds of times before I could get it down. So it's a few eye-opening experiences, honestly, in my first trip down there.
So, Andrew, you said that you know, a lot of people give me a hard time for being a wrestling fan, and you yourself you're pretty. I guess would you say that you're a pretty avid sports fan?
Yeah, I would.
I know that when we worked together years ago, we talked basketball quite a bit and things like that. So, how do you feel about people that make fun of wrestling fans, or would you, you know, how do you deal with something like that?
Yeah, I definitely see people who are on different sides of it. You know, there's the people who love it, and then the people who just seem to kind of laugh or scoff at the idea of it. I remember when I was 18 or so, I was working in a restaurant with this gentleman named his name was Scott Northridge, and he was a wrestling fan. He got into it and whatnot, and I don't remember if I made the comment or someone made the comment that wrestling is fake. You know, the three words that you probably hear more than you care to, and his response was he turns around and says fake, you know, and that was it just. For a minute there, I stood and tried to comprehend, you know, what he was expressing. You know, he was kind of laughing at the thought that we thought it was fake. And over time, you know, I came to distinguish, you know, when people say it's fake, I think what they mean is that it's scripted. You know, it's maybe it's predetermined who wins or what's going to happen. But there's definitely nothing fake about, you know, doing a backflip off three different ropes and then, you know, landing face down on someone and not hurting them in the process. Or I'm sure they do get hurt in the process. That's one question I did have for you guys I wanted to bring up. But yeah, there's definitely nothing fake about the aerobics and the movement that you see performed. So something to kind of distinguish about. I remember Zane looked over at me at one point during the show and he says, "Remember, dude, it's all fake." And then some guy goes flying out of the ring or something, and we just laugh because, you know. So to answer Zane's question, you know, I think there is a group of people out there who just may not, you know, they don't view it as a sport or whatnot. Or they just don't seem to recognize what it's all about. And it's all about, you know, the fans and the interactions and the show. And definitely it's all about the ability to move your body in such a way to not get hurt or to wrestle.
Well, Andrew, as you talked about that and you talked about how they keep from getting hurt, and I'm not a professional wrestler, neither is Zane, but we've been around it. We've talked to pros. We've studied a little bit. And once again, you know, I'm not what you call an expert, but I do know what I do know. And what I do know is that these guys, they go through months of training before they even get into a ring and actually have a match. They have to learn how to take bumps. That's when they fall on the mat or fall on the floor, how they roll through certain things, and how they learn how to do a certain move that to you and I, you know, the audience, the marks, the people, the fans, we're going, oh, my word, how did they keep from killing each other? That is the, as you said, art of professional wrestling. I like that word.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's definitely that art to it, to be able to avoid or absorb things, blows. But there was, you know, ever since I went to that show with you guys, I've been just doing a lot of YouTube searching, and you've probably seen me post a few videos here and there on the Facebook website.
Yeah.
But there was one I saw, and I've gotten into a lot of Undertaker lately, just checking out his, and I'm pretty sure the video I saw was Undertaker taking a chair, and who's the giant guy? His name's like Khalif or King Keith or something like that. You know who I'm talking about?
Giant Gonzalez.
I'm doing a little searching as we're talking too.
Yeah.
But what happened is Undertaker takes this chair and he smashes it across the guy's head. And but the chair, it's one of those metal chairs, you know, you'd have, you'd sit in at church or whatever. And the end result was the headpiece of the chair being completely bent backwards from hitting the guy's head. Like, so I know that there's even times where how do you avoid it? I think a better example would be when Mankind took like 12 shots to the head or whatever. Is that kind of a well-known moment in wrestling?
Yeah, that was the one from The Rock, when The Rock just kind of went a little bit bonkers on him.
Yeah.
It's featured in that documentary that's out there. So,
well, I know since then, there's been a lot of controversy and things, and the WWE stopped chair shots to the head. I think the last match that I remember a chair shot to the head was The Undertaker versus Triple H in WrestleMania. Was that 27?
Yeah, I'm watching some right now, and Undertaker's just taking this chair.
The Undertaker versus Giant Gonzalez in WrestleMania 9, it says, is he gave him quite a few chair shots.
This chair's like mangled in half, dude. That's not acting, man. His head's denting this chair. That's just crazy to me.
Well, like, Dave, you remember when at UCW Zero when we saw Andrew Sowell take a chair shot to the head?
Oh yeah.
And I mean, that was absolutely 100% for real.
Now, remember after the show, I went up to Andrew and he had this huge knot on his head. And by the way, I went to UCW last weekend, and I'll talk more about that later. Andrew wasn't there. But anyway, I talked to Andrew, and I noticed this knot on his head. It was huge. It was from that chair shot. And then a couple months later, I saw him again, and I asked him how long it took that knot to go down. He said literally months before the swelling went down. Now, if you'll just kind of play with me here, today I was watching Lucha Underground, and the friend of our program, Marty the Moth Martinez, who is now the Lucha Underground champ, it was from last Wednesday's show, and he was actually wrestling his in-ring sister, Mara Perosa. If you ever watch Lucha Underground, you'll know what I'm talking about. But they did a couple of chair shots to the head. And then Mara Perosa, who's a big, thick lady, I mean, she's not fat by any means, she's just a big, strong young woman, she picks up Marty, puts him into like a suplex, and suplexes him onto the folding chair, which is set up, and that chair just bends and breaks. And Marty got up a few minutes later. I'm sure that had, as they say, leave a mark. So these chairs, these tables, they can be very dangerous, and I just take my hats off to them.
Andrew, I was thinking one thing I wanted to ask you too is, you talked a little bit about scripted and things like that and predetermined outcome, and I'm not sure if you I'm sure you've seen the hype and the outcome of the. UFC match that was
I watched it live
Saturday.
Yeah.
so now when this whole thing was going down, I mean, this feud's been going on for what, like over a year, right?
Yeah.
And I remember when some of this stuff went down, and I used to tell my other friends at the college and stuff that I used to work at, I said, you guys know, like, yes, like UFC, they land their punches, whatever. I says, but like all this hype, all this stuff, I was like, that's like a playbook out of Vince McMahon's, you know, that's like a play out of Vince McMahon's book, right? You know, and I've seen so much, so many people calling, like the MK Bennett, he says, I love professional wrestling, as he posts a clip of them jumping out of the ring, punching each other.
And you know what? That was the most entertaining part of the night, was after the fight was over and Khabib jumps the fence and starts going off. That was the best part.
I just want to say, like, what do you tell me what your thoughts are on on a situation like some of these other things, like excuse me, the UFC and things like that, that take maybe a small paragraph from Vince McMahon's playbook and just run with that. What do you think about that?
Yeah. So I mean, leading up to that fight, even before that, when Conor boxed Floyd, so to speak, there was just a lot of media play and a lot of, you know, even just childish acting at times where you get the impression it's just to draw the crowd in and not so much the sincerity of the words. And so it seems like there is a bit of that, you know, they kind of draw off of the, when you say McMahon, pardon my lack of education, but he's the, he's kind of the wild guy that runs his mouth. Is that right?
Vince McMahon is the owner of WWE.
And he was
the one that, I guess, how would you explain it, Dave, that was kind of responsible for the huge burst in the 80s and stuff of WWE when they started buying up territories and the first big – I mean, Vince McMahon was the first to take their show live and stuff, right?
It took it more nationwide from the territories.
Okay.
Yeah, and he also – he was the one that actually saved pay-per-views. He mortgaged his entire life. If that WrestleMania had not worked – as well as it did, Vince McMahon would be a nobody today, where he is now a multi-billionaire because he took the chance. Now, I'm going to take you guys back just a little bit further. You know, you guys are talking to Vince McMahon. You're talking MMA. I was with a young man, 16 years old, on Saturday night for his birthday present. I took him to UCW Zero, and he started asking about all the trash talking that was going on. So I gave him a little history lesson. If you don't mind, I'll just do that really quick so you can understand where I'm coming from. Professional wrestling started basically on the carnival circuit. And then at the early days of TV, you started seeing professional wrestling become very popular. As it started to wane, one man kind of saw something. He says, let's get a little bit more showmanship into it. And that was a guy named Gorgeous George. He came out with bobby pins and curls in his hair, flamboyant robes, and the Fabulous Moolah was his valet spraying perfume in the air because he didn't want to be around the masses that smelled so bad, and the other wrestlers too. Well, I'm going to fast forward you just a little bit more to a man named Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, professional boxing. He started using some of the things he learned while watching one Gorgeous George on TV, and he started doing the, oh, I'm so pretty. I'm going to take Sunday Liston. I'm going to take him down. He is never going to be in the ring again because I'm going to knock him out. I flew like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Trash talking, selling the product. And that is where professional boxing started taking off, because they started watching professional wrestling. And now in all sports, it's controversy that sells. And it is that trash talking that gets people, whether they're for or against a team, they like that trash talking more than they would like to realize, because it creates controversy, it creates tension, and it's a story. Right, Zane?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, Dave. That's, you know, and that's what I think it was Trent Hunsaker commented on MK Bennett's post, and he said, everything's a work, and everybody that believes it is a mark.
Now, here's a question for you guys, kind of along those lines. Dr. Dave, you've been giving me a little bit of a history lesson, and one of my questions I did have as I've been doing my research on the YouTubes, you know, I like to go down to the comment section, because that's where you see the community. That's where you see the people who really passionate and care about, you know, what they're watching. And so when I do this, I see people talking about how great the WWF was, you know, back in the early 90s, early 2000s, and then how much of a drastic change there is today. And it seems like there's even a little bit of disappointment from some people with where we are today as opposed to what we were. So can you maybe clarify for me, you know, what the WWF and the WWE are, how they're different, or how the eras were different in those times?
Well, the WWF is the WWE. It actually started off as the WWWF, I believe, or FF or something like that. But when they were as the WWF in the WrestleMania days, the World Wildlife Fund sued them and made them change their name to the WWE. So there's just a little bit of a history lesson. But when things kind of changed from the Attitude Era, which is the era with The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and even before when you had Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior and my favorite Randy Macho Man Savage doing those things, the WWE was basically held by one family, the McMahon family. They were the principal owners of that company. Then they went public, and they had to start answering to a board of directors and to shareholders. So that's when that PG era started off, and that's what a lot of people are looking back, some of them very fondly, to the Attitude Era. And I think you see a little bit of that happening from this past weekend to now with the Super Showdown, where you had Triple H, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, against The Undertaker in Australia. And now that has kind of morphed because of DX and then the Brothers of Destruction, which their heyday basically was during the end of the Attitude Era. And now they're going to be wrestling at that event. They're going to have the Crown Jewel, I think as they call it, in Saudi Arabia coming up next month. It's kind of a flashback to that Attitude Era, but how far that Vince McMahon's going to let DX go is still to be seen. Zane, I think you know a little bit more about what happened with DX and how they kind of changed the scene for professional wrestling. Kind of go tell us a little bit more about DX. A little bit more about
DX is, I mean, okay, this is Zane Peterson's opinion, right? And we always talk one thing on this show, Andrew, is that all things in this show are opinion based. You know, we are not professionals, and we may misname dates and we may misname years, and that's because we're not perfect. And you know, one thing that Dave and I enjoy doing this show is because we're allowed to express our opinions and we share similar opinions. And so in my opinion, DX ripped off the NWO. The NWO.
Tell us how you really feel, Zane.
The NWO, I don't know how familiar and how much you know, you've been doing on your research. But the NWO was a Eric Bischoff creation, and Eric Bischoff was a general manager for WCW, and he kind of was the brainchild behind WCW. Ted Turner gave Eric Bischoff a lot of control and a lot of things like that. And Eric Bischoff had done some time in Japan, and they had this faction. And a faction, Andrew, I'm sure, I don't know if you know, is a group of individuals in wrestling, like, you know, the Nexus or the Generation X or the NWO.
The Strowman family, or is that what they're called?
Faction. Yeah, it would be the Wyatt family.
The Wyatt family, that's right, that's right, okay.
So, you know, so Eric Bischoff brings this idea of the NWO, and it's Hulk Hogan and Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, and they're this group of outsiders from the WWE that are taking over WCW and making, like, all the splashes. And the early days of the NWO, Dave, you got to agree with me on this, were pretty – we're just too sweet, right?
Oh, they were. They were incredible.
I mean, do you remember when they – when I mean, we've talked many times about them. You got to do your research on this one, Andrew. When Kevin Nash picks Rey Mysterio Jr. up and throws him against the TV trailer outside.
And police, people were calling the police – going to that police went to that studio to see what was going on. As a matter of fact, there was a YouTube video that was posted, I believe, yesterday. Eric Bischoff talked about that very, very event. And I was watching it live, and I was shocked.
I'm watching it right now. He leaps from the balcony, and he catches him. Here goes, Zane.
I just, oh, it's great.
So the whole thing with the WWF at the time was how far could they push the limit? You know, the Attitude Era, you know, that's what they call it, was how close to the envelope can you push it without being rated TVMA? You know,
okay. I mean,
some of the stuff with Val Venus and some of these things were pretty darn risque, and D-Generation X, you know, they were the ones that were the they were known, you know, the whole suck it thing and things like that, that they were just trying to be as provocative as possible and as upfront and in your face as possible.
Yeah.
And you know, so they just kind of took that whole faction thing to a next level. You know, they did something that a lot of factions can't do, and they made it work, you know.
So those were the glory days then. You brought up a good a point that reminded me. So DXS Generation X, right?
Generation X, yeah.
D Generation X, great. Okay, so I wanted to talk about kind of on a side note here. I like to get so when I think about like basketball and football stuff, some of the things that really draw me in are moments, like great moments, or talking about, you know, who we think the greatest, you know, basketball player is or whatever. And I feel like that translates into WWE just perfectly. And so I kind of wanted to talk about my favorite moment, and kind of I wanted to hear Dr. Dave's, and Zane told me what his was. I don't think I could find it though. But yeah, let's talk about some favorite moments here, because mine has to do with Generation X, and Zane kind of reminded me of that.
Okay.
So like I said, I've been getting into the YouTube a lot, just watching different videos, and Undertaker's been a big one. I've really caught up on him. I like how, you know, his interactions with Kane, and, you know, are they friends today or foes tomorrow, you know, that kind of a deal. And there's this one moment where I don't know the whole storyline, because it's got to be a huge ongoing story, you know, in the world of wrestling. And so there's probably a lot of keeping up to do, but whatever was going on, D-Generation X was they were looking to recruit Kane to their side, and they had Undertaker down in the ring, getting him pretty good, ready to put an end to him, and you know, Kane's theme music comes on, and he comes rolling out, and he just jumps in the ring and starts beating up all these Generation X guys, and he saves his brother, and he jumps out of the ring to hunt him down. And then there's this moment where Kane turns around, and he's Undertaker's standing there just staring at him in awe, and Undertaker kind of reaches his hand out, Kane reaches his hand out, and the camera goes to Undertaker, and he just stands there for a moment, kind of dazed, and then he drops down on a knee, and he does this, you know, he does this awesome sign back to him, and then the fire just lights up, and the crowd goes crazy, man. I found that clip, and ever since, like, it just kind of gave me the chills, and I wanted to get your guys' take. Had you seen that? Do you remember that? And what are some of your what's your favorite moment in the world of wrestling?
Take it, Dave.
Okay. That moment, you know, it's burned in my memory too, because Kane came out to be as the Undertaker's evil brother, that the Undertaker had actually burned Kane alive, and his face was badly deformed. That's why he was under a mask. And they've worked that story for years, and then they had the two get together as the Brothers of Destruction. But it was a great moment in professional wrestling. But I'm going to take you back a little bit farther to when I was probably in my late teens or early 20s, and it wasn't the WWF, but it was in USWA. Now, I talk a lot about Memphis, Tennessee wrestling, but you can find this because I've watched it several times on YouTube. It is the incident with Wayne Ferris in a tag team match with Bill Dundee and Jerry Lawler, and I can't remember who Wayne Ferris's partner was, but they were in Tupelo, Mississippi, and they tore the place up literally, especially the concession stand. The concession stand brawl, Tupelo, Mississippi. You need to watch that sometimes, because it is an unreal piece of professional wrestling. These guys causing $10,000 to $15,000 worth of damage, all for the show. And then you have a wrestling announcer named Lance Russell, who, if he's not in the Hall of Fame everywhere, he should be, because he goes along with it. It was completely, totally unscripted. He knew it was going to happen, but his reactions are true. And it's really a pivotal moment to me in professional wrestling, and how these guys can take a simple thing like popcorn in a concession stand and make it look deadly. You know, they were hitting each other with popcorn, hot dogs, hot dog buns, and soda. And it was just a mess. But it was a great moment in professional wrestling. I think just about anybody would agree with that. If they're looking at great moments in pro wrestling. And then, you know, I talk a lot about of announcers because I am a radio announcer. It was the moment when Mick Foley fell off Hell in a Cell and fell all that way into that table where that tooth went through his nose.
Yes.
And it was good old JR when he said, "Oh, my God, they've killed him." He really thought that Mick was dead. That, to me, was a true moment in professional wrestling.
Let's cut Zane off for a second because I wanted to add to that. I'm actually taking notes here as we're talking, you know, thinking of points to throw in. And you said the unscripted moments, and that reminded me exactly of when Mick Foley, is that Mankind then? That's his
yeah,
name?
Mankind. Yeah.
Yeah. I watched that one, too. And he was thrown off, lands on the table, but then he climbs back up, and was it Undertaker, I believe, and he throws him in on the roof. He throws him down on the roof, and the cage breaks, and he falls all the way to the ring, down to the ring, and that's where that part wasn't planned. You know, they weren't planning on chucking him through the top of the ring down onto the ring.
Now to go a little bit further in that storyline, yeah. Terry Funk, who was a very good friend of Mick Foley, and Terry Funk is a legend in this business, he was at the arena and actually went into the ring, and he was worried about Mick, wondering if he was dead.
Yeah.
And if you ever get a chance to hear Mr. Funk, Terry Funk, tell that story, or if you get to hear Mick tell that story like Zane and I did when he was doing a comedy routine in Ogden a couple of years ago, it is bone-chilling, just absolute bone-chilling what happened when he went through not only onto the table but through the roof of the Hell in a Cell.
Yes.
It's a great moment.
And real quick, and then we'll get Zane's greatest moment. Another unscripted, I believe it was unscripted, and I think I showed this to Zane or someone, is when Strowman is fighting Big Show, and they're both up on the rings, and Strowman like throws Big Show like back over his shoulder, and they both land on the ring, and the whole arena just crashes to the floor, like everything just comes falling down, and you see all these referees running over, like three on each guy, just checking to make sure they're alive, you know.
Uh-huh.
So great times on with the unplanned moments and how the wrestlers, you know, face those situations. It really stands out.
Can I take you back to three other moments in the WWE? Zane, yeah, I'm sorry about this, but
Zane.
I just thought
Forget
about this.
Zane.
Very quick. I'm not a fan of Brock Lesnar, as most people know. But one time in the ring, he said, I can't remember who he said to, he says, "You're going to Suplex City, bitch." And then the next week, people were going Suplex City. And that became a huge catchphrase for him. That was a spur of the moment thing.
Oh.
Steve Austin and Stone Cold, and Zane, you might have to help me out with this one a little bit. The Austin 316 came at a pay-per-view event when Steve busted his lip wide open against Jake the Snake Roberts, had to go get stitched up, and came back. And if I'm not mistaken, it might have been a King of the Ring or something like
that. Yeah.
And he was being interviewed by Michael P.S. Hayes, and he said, "You got your Bible thumping going on right now," because Jake was professing to be a born-again Christian at the time. And he says, "But Austin 316 just says, I just kicked your ass." That was spur of the moment. The next night, Monday Night Raw, 316 signs were everywhere. And then one more real quick one. If you'll remember back, and this involves Steve Austin and Mick Foley and Mr. McMahon. McMahon was in the hospital, and you've got Steve Austin stalking him, hitting him with the bedpan, and then you've got Mick Foley trying to console Mr. McMahon, and he brings out the sock puppet that becomes named Mr. Socko. Spur-of-the-moment thing. They didn't think anything was going to come of it. The next night, people were wearing sock puppets on their hands calling for Mr. Socko. Fascinating
stuff. I'm pulling
stuff.
That up right now, man. This is great. Mr. Socko. There he is. Oh, this is great, man. Seeing all this stuff I don't know about. Okay. All right, Zane, we're ready for you.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, some of my favorite moments were some of the live stuff that I've seen. You know, I was in Salt Lake City for Bill Goldberg's first match.
Lucky.
I guess first televised match. I don't know if he had any other ones besides that. Dave, you might know that. I don't know.
Yeah, in his book he said it was his first televised match. Yes.
Yeah, so we were there live for Monday Nitro in Salt Lake City. So that was something that,
you know, I was a part of history. I'd like to say I was a part of history on that one.
No, I don't. I think the match was pretty much a squash match, but still, you know, we were like, when we saw him come out of the back and those sparks fly and he does that thing with his, you know, he sticks his tongue out, you know, and we're like, this freak show. Like, this guy is huge. You know, I remember me and my brother were there with my dad, and we were like, my brother Chad was like, who is that guy? I've never seen anybody so big as him. You know, Goldberg was just massive. And, you know, some of the other stuff, you know, we went to a WCW Thunder, and it was a dark match, and it was Bill Goldberg versus Hollywood Hogan. And so we got to see Bill Goldberg spear Hogan in a dark match after the television had gone off the air. And so, you know, some of those things like that are my personal. I mean, they're nothing like huge in history, like, you know, Undertaker chokeslam Mankind through Hell in a Cell. I mean, of course, that's everybody's one of their favorite moments in professional wrestling. And then, you know, when he says live, when Terry Funk comes running out and Undertaker's pacing and he says, is he alive? Or did he say, is he dead?
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Then he picks Terry Funk up, choke slams Terry Funk right out of his shoes.
That's right.
Oh, man.
I just can't imagine. I mean, here Terry Funk's going. He's like, you're going for a ride, buddy. Hang on. And he leaves his tennis shoes behind.
Great, dude.
Just silly little things like that that I've always thought are, you know, it's those silly little moments like that that I kind of miss in professional wrestling that I hope are coming back as we start to see a little more transitioning towards the, you know, towards the attitude type. I don't think we'll ever go back to the attitude era, but maybe, you know, with the suppression type era, or, you know, a little bit more edgy product, a little bit more violence. You know, I think we start seeing a little bit more storytelling too, because it seems like some of the same stories are being told over and over and over again.
Okay, yeah, that's kind of the impression I get too, just kind of when I catch up with your guys' posts on Facebook and whatnot. It seems like, what was it, someone's like, I can't remember the wrestler's name now, but they just kind of predicted, you know, what matchup they were going to see because they had seen it before. So yeah, I kind of
Roman Reigns against Braun Strowman.
There's the name.
Roman Reigns against Brock Lesnar.
Turnbuckle Trash fans, you can stay in the ring with us by following us on Facebook and clicking that like button on our Facebook page, Turnbuckle Trash. Or you can follow us on Twitter, at Turnbuckle Trash. And in case you got any comments, suggestions, or questions, you can email us at wpfpod@gmail.com. Again, that's wpfpod at gmail.com.